Socatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Socatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling a topic that's, well, profoundly misunderstood and often feared: schizophrenia.
Yeah, it carries so much historical baggage and stigma.
Exactly. And that's why we're digging into it today, to kind of cut through the noise and look at what might actually be happening mechanistically.
And our guide for this is a really landmark book, Schizophrenia, A Cognitive Neuroscience Model, by Christopher Frith and Eve Johnstone. It really shifted the conversation.
It did. Our goal here for you, listening, is to help move past those really unhelpful, outdated ideas. You know, schizophrenia is just random madness or some vague chemical imbalance.
Right, because what Frith and Johnstone offer is something much more sophisticated. They frame it as an understandable disorder rooted in specific cognitive processes and their neural underpinnings.
Yeah, a disorder of the brain systems.
The core idea, and it's powerful, is that schizophrenia is fundamentally about breakdowns in things like consciousness, self-awareness, and crucially, our ability to understand other people's minds.
And using that cognitive neuroscience lens, it really helps demystify the illness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is so important for reducing stigma.
Absolutely critical.
And the book is so effective because of the authors themselves. They bring such complementary expertise. It's like the perfect pairing.
It really is. You've got Christopher Frith, who's this world-renowned neuropsychologist, a real pioneer in using brain imaging, fMRI, PET scans to see, you know, the brain doing things.
He's like the cognitive detective in the story, right? Always asking why. Why the voices? Why the sense of being controlled?
Exactly. He connects those really bizarre, frightening, subjective experiences to, well, potentially identifiable breakdowns in how the mind processes information, things like self-monitoring.
And then balancing that, you have Eve Johnstone. She provides the crucial clinical and neurological grounding.
Mm-hmm. A leading psychiatrist and researcher. Her work, like the Northwick Park studies using CT scans back in the day, was instrumental. It provided some of the first hard evidence of structural brain differences, like those enlarged ventricles you often hear about.
So you get Frith with the sort of elegant theories about the mind.
The psychological models.
And Johnstone providing the solid clinical biological evidence about the brain.
And together they really managed to bridge that gap, connecting the internal feeling of the illness with the physical brain. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah, that synthesis is definitely the book's strength. It aims for this comprehensive evidence-based picture, moving way beyond simplistic explanations.
They take you on this whole journey. It starts with the history, you know, Kraepelin, Bleuler, and the basic symptom descriptions.
Which is important context.
Definitely. But they quickly move beyond just listing symptoms. They ask, okay, what does it actually feel like to experience this?
That subjective experience is key.
It is, and that launches them into their core cognitive models, the failure of self-awareness, the problems understanding others' intentions.
And critically, they don't just leave those theories hanging. They tie them directly back to the neuroscience, the structural findings, the functional imaging results.
Right. Before bringing it all together to look at what this means for treatment, like cognitive behavioral therapy for psychosis.
So it's this weave of history, clinical observation, psychology, neuroscience, creating a really holistic picture.
Absolutely. And even looking back at the history is revealing. You mentioned Bleuler coining the term schizophrenia.
Yeah, split mind, which has caused so much confusion.
It really has, because he didn't mean split personality. That's dissociative identity disorder, totally different thing.
Right. Bleuler meant a fragmentation, a splitting between different mental functions like thought, emotion, perception. They become disconnected from each other and from reality.
Exactly. And that fragmentation underlies the symptoms, which the book groups into, well, three main types. First, the positive symptoms. These are the ones people often think of first things added to experience. Hallucinations, typically hearing voices, or delusions like strong paranoid beliefs.
Got it. The presence of abnormal experiences.
Then, maybe less well-known but often more debilitating long-term, are the negative symptoms.
These are things that are missing.
Yeah, precisely. A reduction or absence of normal functions. Things like avolition, a real lack of motivation, difficulty starting or sustaining activities, or allergia, a poverty of speech.
And the book stresses these can be incredibly difficult for daily life.
Hugely, often more so than the positive symptoms, which might come and go more. And finally, they highlight cognitive symptoms.
Deficits in thinking.
Yeah, problems with attention, memory, planning, decision-making, what we call executive functions. And crucially, These aren't just side effects of medication or distress. They're seen as core features of the illness itself.
Okay, so that lays out the what. Let's get into the why. How does Frith explain those really striking positive symptoms? The voices, the feeling of being controlled. This is his self-monitoring idea, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. The failure of self-monitoring. And this is, I think, one of the most compelling parts of the book.
How does it work?
Okay, so think about your brain normally. When you decide to do something, lift your hand, say something, even just think a thought, your brain sends out the command. But it also sends out a simultaneous copy of that command internally.
Like a memo to itself.
Kind of, yeah. It's called an efference copy. And it's basically a prediction of what that action or thought should feel like or sound like.
Ah, so it preps the brain for the outcome.
Right. And that efference copy acts like a tag. This sensation thought is self-generated. You did this.
Which is why you know your own thoughts are yours and why you can't tickle yourself.
Yeah.
The brain predicts the sensation and dampens it down.
Exactly that. Now, in schizophrenia, according to this model, that system glitches.
The efference copy mechanism fails.
It seems to. The signal doesn't get generated right, or it isn't processed correctly. So an internal thought pops up.
But it's missing the made-by-me tag.
Precisely. So the brain, experiencing this untagged internal speech, concludes it must be coming from somewhere else.
An external source. That's the auditory hallucination, the voice.
And same for actions. If you initiate a movement, but the efference copy fails, you don't get that internal sense of agency of having caused it yourself.
So the experience is, my arm moved, but I didn't feel like I moved it.
And the brain tries to make sense of that bizarre experience. The logical conclusion, someone else must be controlling me.
Wow. So it's not faulty logic. It's a logical conclusion based on faulty internal data.
That's the core idea, a mechanical failure leading to these delusions of control or thought insertion. It's a really powerful explanatory framework.
It really is. Okay, so if failed self-monitoring explains those kind of internal positive symptoms, what of the social problems, the paranoia, the withdrawal?
Right. For that, they point to another cognitive system failure, problems with theory of mind.
Theory of mind. That's our ability to kind of guess what other people are thinking or feeling,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes called mentalizing. It's usually this automatic, unconscious skill we use constantly to navigate social situations, figuring out intentions, beliefs, desires.
And Frith and Johnstone show that people with schizophrenia often have significant difficulties with this.
Yes, consistent impairments. They struggle to accurately infer what's going on in other people's minds.
Okay. And how does that lead to paranoia?
Well, think about it. If you can't reliably read intentions, especially subtle social cues,
you might misinterpret things.
Exactly. Neutral behavior, someone glancing your way, a quiet conversation nearby might get misinterpreted as having negative intent, hostile, threatening, maybe part of a conspiracy against you.
Ah, so the inability to accurately mentalize breeds persecutory delusions. That makes sense.
It does. And if the social world constantly feels confusing, misinterpretable, potentially threatening,
you'd probably withdraw from it.
Which connects the theory of mind difficulties directly to social withdrawal, a key negative symptom. The social world just becomes too overwhelming and hard to predict.
So these two core cognitive failures, self-monitoring and theory of mind, explain a huge range of symptoms.
They really do. And then the book pivots to ground these cognitive ideas in the brain, drawing heavily on Johnstone's area of expertise.
The neurobiology.
Right. They review those consistent structural findings, the enlarged ventricles, some reductions in overall brain volume. This isn't controversial anymore. It firmly establishes schizophrenia as a biological brain disorder.
And the functional scans, what do they show?
They show altered patterns of brain activity. A common finding is hypofrontality, basically, reduced activity in the frontal lobes, particularly during tasks that require planning and, well, self-monitoring.
Ah, connecting back to Frith's theory.
Exactly. And also altered activity in temporal lobe regions, which are involved in auditory processing and language.
Yeah.
It provides that direct link between the cognitive deficits and specific brain regions. And all this evidence together supports what's called the neurodevelopmental hypothesis.
Which is the idea that this doesn't just suddenly appear in early adulthood.
Correct. It suggests schizophrenia isn't caused by a single hit or event later in life. Instead, it likely results from a complex interplay.
Between what?
Between genetic vulnerability, a predisposition, and environmental factors. Things like prenatal infections, maybe complications during birth, significant stress, possibly substance use, like heavy cannabis use in adolescence.
So these things might disrupt early brain development. even in the womb.
And that's the idea. They could subtly alter how the brain wires itself early on, but this vulnerability might lie dormant, essentially invisible,
until
the brain goes through its final major maturation phase during adolescence and early adulthood. That period of intense synaptic pruning and reorganization might be when these earlier vulnerabilities finally manifest as symptoms.
Wow. So it reframes it entirely. It's not really an adult onset illness, but a developmental disorder with a delayed fuse.
That's a good way to put it. The vulnerability is there much earlier.
Taking a step back then, what are the big overarching themes from this whole approach?
I think the biggest shift is moving from just describing symptoms to trying to understand the mechanisms behind them.
Yeah, the why.
Definitely. So theme one has to be schizophrenia as a disorder of self-consciousness. It really highlights that our basic sense of self, that I am the one thinking my thoughts and doing my actions, isn't guaranteed. It's an active brain process, and when it breaks down,
your very sense of identity can fracture. That's profound.
It is. And flowing from that is theme two, the logic of the illogical. This is so crucial for empathy.
You mean seeing delusions not as just random madness?
But as the person's best attempt to make rational sense of truly bizarre internal experiences. If my thoughts don't feel like mine, the logical step is to think someone else put them there.
That changes how you view the person's experience completely. It's humanizing.
Totally. And maybe theme three is how the book bridges the explanatory gap. It successfully links the subjective internal world of the patient, the feeling, the experience, with objective, measurable brain data.
Mind and brain is two sides of the same coin.
Exactly. Showing how a glitch in neural processing can directly result in a specific, strange, subjective feeling.
They use some really memorable ways to phrase these ideas too, don't they?
They do. There are some lines that really capture the essence.
I was struck by the summary of the self-monitoring idea, something like, "The terrifying experience of hearing a voice is not a sign of a broken reality tester, but of a broken self-monitor."
The brain has lost its ability to recognize its own thoughts and actions as its own, and so it attributes them to the outside world.
Yeah, that reframes everything. It's not about failing to see reality. It's about failing to recognize self.
And the one about delusions. Ah, yes. A delusion is not a random, baseless belief. It is the patient's best attempt at a rational explanation for an utterly bizarre and inexplicable internal experience. That really drives home the logic of the illogical point.
It does. And finally, the impact of the social deficits. Schizophrenia robs a person not only of their own line, but also of the ability to understand the minds of others.
Oof. Yeah, that captures the dual tragedy of the internal fragmentation and the external isolation caused by the theory of mind problems.
So, okay, we have this incredibly detailed mechanistic understanding. How does this actually change things on the ground? What are the real life applications?
Well, for clinicians, this model is absolutely foundational for therapies like CBTP, cognitive behavioral therapy, for psychosis.
How so?
Instead of directly challenging a delusion head on, which often doesn't work, a therapist can use this model. They can validate the feeling based on the proposed mechanism. Like, okay, I understand why it feels like you're being controlled given this potential issue with self-monitoring. That must be terrifying.
So you validate the experience first.
Right. And then you work collaboratively to examine the evidence for the belief that resulted from that experience. It allows for targeted strategies based on the underlying cognitive difficulty.
That makes sense. What about for families?
Huge implications. Understanding the cognitive and biological roots helps combat blame and frustration. Realizing, for example, that avolition, the lack of motivation, isn't laziness, but a core negative symptom.
Changes how you interact, presumably.
Absolutely. It helps reduce what researchers call high expressed emotion. Things like criticism, hostility, over-involvement within families, which are known to be linked to higher relapse rates. Understanding fosters patience and support.
Less blame, more support, and for society.
The biggest impact is fighting stigma. Framing schizophrenia clearly as a brain disorder with understandable cognitive consequences moves it out of the realm of madness or moral failing and into the realm of neurological illness, like epilepsy or multiple sclerosis.
Which is where it needs to be.
Exactly.
So wrapping up, what's the single biggest takeaway for you from revisiting this work?
For me, it's just that core message. The illness is fundamentally understandable. Maybe not simple, definitely complex, but understandable through these cognitive and neural mechanisms. It moves us from just describing what happens to exploring why it happens. That feels like massive progress.
Yeah, I agree. What surprised me most, or maybe what stuck with me most this time, was the emphasis on the neurodevelopmental hypothesis. implications of that timeline.
That the roots go way back.
Yeah, that the vulnerability might be laid down years, even decades, before the first obvious symptoms appear. It really highlights how critical those early life and adolescent periods are. And, you know, where we might need to look for prevention down the line.
It opens up whole new avenues for research and potentially intervention, really paradigm-shifting work.
Absolutely. A fascinating deep dive. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Econtra Foundation.